Blog Talk Radio.
All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindsay.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Fighting up-to-the-minute information.
The of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only...
On interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending,
3, 2,
David Lickin.
So good to have you with us, everybody. It is Monday, December 4th. The Christmas songs have begun. The programs and the Christmas parties have begun. So exciting to have you be with us today. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals and an increasing number of realtors. So, and we're grateful to have you, our listeners, dialing in and tuning in with us. Merry Christmas. And happy holidays. So excited to have you be a part of it. Our commitment to you is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. And the stories that come in from where it's being listened to, someone's listening to us on their new Apple Watch because you don't need to connect in. So they were out kayaking and they were listening in. They had their earbuds and it's a waterproof watch, so they didn't have their phone with them. And they said, "It worked, Lickin'. I was listening to you kayaking." So anyway, it's crazy. Love technology, and we're thrilled to have the technology we have that looks like is working a little bit better today. We'll see. Anyway, but it's good to have you with us. Again, today's hot topic is continuing on a series of social media marketing. We're going to be continuing our discussion today with Kathy Kemper as Zanuck. So I'm slaughtering her pronunciation. Kathy, apologize. We'll get that right. Of Catalyst Campus. And she has got a school that Joe introduced us to. And Joe, you have to clean up my mispronunciation of her name there. It's terrible. But anyway, she has a school called Mortgage and Business School that she does teaching on, and she does a lot of teaching on social media. We're really excited to have her here with us. So we're going to continue our social media strategy with a guest. I can't pronounce her last name. It's Zanuck. There you go. Got it. Joe, you have to barrel bail me out on that one a little bit later on. But we're grateful to have all of you with us. We're talking to you again this week about the social media, and we're going to also talk to you about our sponsors. We're grateful for their social media efforts. Arch MI, which is the new innovative rate star program, is very cool, and they've got some apps that go with that program that are very effective, and I encourage you to check it out. Motivity Solutions, which provides real-time reporting and dashboard scorecards, encourage you to get connected. Go to their website. They've got a very mobile-friendly, mobile-first website. Encourage you to look at. You can get all your information about your business on your mobile device. Just so cool. I love the way you can manage your company now. You know, but back in the days, I've never been much of a golfer, but I enjoy the game. But it's so nice to know that you could dial in and see what's going on with your business from whatever your hole you're on. And if you get frustrated with your game of golf like I do, you probably dial in around the third hole to look at your business. Also, want to say thank you and Merry Christmas to Velma, efficient mortgage marketing and email platform, as well as Simplifile, a real-time electronic communications exchange. Nancy Alley and her team do a great job there of getting you connected with your closing agents. And there's just a lot more to Simplifile. You need to go check it out on their website, simplifile.com. Also, the Mortgage Collaborative, David Kittle, my good buddy, and John Robbins, and Jim Parks, and Gary Acosta, and a whole group of them got together and formed the Collaborative. It's very exciting to be a part of the power of the network, and it's a great network of trooper mortgage professionals. Also, Finastra, the third largest fintech company in the world. nice to have the third largest fintech company in the world as a sponsor. They have over 10,000 employees with offices in 42 countries with 9,000 companies they're serving worldwide. Also, special thank you and Merry Christmas, holiday greetings to Alice, Andy, to our group that gets together, Joe, of course, and now Alan's a part of the group. Very excited to have him there. And also, let's talk about the upcoming industry events. Rob Van Horst is going to talk about some of these, but we have the Independent Mortgage Banking Conference. I really want to encourage you all to be attending. Also, just before that and partnered up with that is the MBA Mergers and Acquisitions workshop. So a lot of good stuff there in the industry. And without further ado, let's head over to Rob and hear what he has to say for the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapport. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. It was a busy week in Congress last week with the Senate passing a major tax bill. Most notably was an amendment MBA helped to get included. The amendment addressed language pertaining to the mortgage servicing rights. MBA praised Majority Leader McConnell, Chairman Hatch, Senators Rounds, Crapo, and Perdue for working with us to ensure that the amendment was part of the final package. Also last week, the weekly mortgage application survey showed that mortgage applications decreased 3.1% from 1 week earlier, and the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was unchanged at 4.2%. This week, leaders in real estate finance will come to Washington for MBA's 2017 Summit on Diversity and Inclusion. Attendees will hear from FHA Commissioner Mel Watt and Mark Moriel, President and CEO of the Urban League. Thanks for joining us this week on MBA's Mortgage Minute.
I tell you, Rob and the group there does a great job at the MBA of communicating. You should be checking out their videos. Last week, I was so impressed with a video that the MBA put out from the economic department. It was actually Lynn Fisher. She did a great job on that. I love the graphics that they're using, and I see how the MBA is really using social media. And David Steven is certainly the king of social media. So we're thrilled to have the partnership with them. Also, Alice, I'm sure, will be talking about an announcement they put out this last week. It's very, very important. So thank you, MBA, for the partnership. Appreciate you guys very, very much. Let's get over to Les Parker, who's got a macro look at the markets. I always like what he's doing with his, how he mixes in a music theme in with his message. So, Les, what you got
Thanks,
for us?
Thanks, Dave. This is Market Logics Live, sponsored by Loan Logic.
Hey, life, look at me.
Hey, life, look at trades. They can see the reality because they shook us, took us out of our world. We woke up. And suddenly, we just woke up to the happening. What is happening in Turkey and China? The Turkish lira is down about 10% over the last month. The iShares Turkish ETF is down about 20% over the last 4 months. China sees bond yields rise and debt levels continue to expand. The Hong Kong yield bank rates rose about 60 basis points over the last 30 days. The international economic environment and political turmoil support lower U.S. rates, but the technical numbers support higher rates. The yin-yang gives you balance, openness, and rates going nowhere. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
And then it happened. Love that old song. Good job, Les. Appreciate it so much. By the way, folks, we're dialed in on a direct, and there's no way I can mute my phone. So when my cell phone, I forgot to put my cell phone on mute. And so anyway, apologize for a little phone activity in the background. We've got Joe Farr dialed in, and we're so glad to have him here. How are you?
Thank you.
You got a little bit of frog in the throat. Let's see if you can get this all introduced for us. But yeah, well, tell us about today's. And what, you know, what are we going to have a lump of coal in our stocking here for year end? But give us the.
Well, today's not bad. You know, today we're down just a touch, but it's been really a pretty quiet morning, especially given that the stock market's up another couple hundred points on the Dow. Factory orders came in less than expected, or fell less than expected. So both of those are not good for the bond market, and we're only down five or six basis points on the day. So not bad given what has come out. But then looking at last week, Dave, it was a strange week. I mean, there was a lot of things that moved the market many of them were offsetting the other. And so kind of go through this on a day-by-day basis. Monday was quiet, but Tuesday,
yeah.
Consumer confidence came out, best level since the year 2000. Then the Senate confirmation hearings for Jerome Powell began. No surprises, really, in his testimony. Reports of progress in the Senate on the tax bill was negative for mortgage rates, and then that got offset somewhat by a missile launch in North Korea,
yeah.
So that created a little opposite effect. Then on Wednesday, strong data came out. Third quarter GDP was better than expected. It rose to 3.3. It's up from the last estimate at 3.0. Pending home sales beat expectations. Stock market continued to rally, and comments from Janet Yellen to Congress were a little more hawkish than expected. So wound up not being a good day for mortgage rates on Wednesday. On Thursday, Senator McCain announced he'd be voting for the tax bill, so that too was not good for mortgage rates. Then on Friday, it really got volatile in that shifting prospects for passage caused volatility early. It was on and off and maybe or likely. And then around 11 o'clock, they announced that Michael Flynn had pled guilty to lying to Congress and that he was going to cooperate with the Mueller investigation, which caused a really significant improvement in prices, a flight to safety, if you will, although that didn't last long. Later in the day, Senator McConnell announced that they had the votes to pass the tax reform, which was bad for mortgage rates. So we said lots of influences going both ways last week, which resulted in on the week, it was just down 14 basis points. So it's, you know, a very small movement for all that was going on. The economic data really was the significant thing was core PCE held steady and ISM manufacturing remained strong. This week, there's not as much going on from a schedule perspective. We'll just have to wait and see which of these events might come up on a not scheduled basis. But looking at the calendar, ISM services comes out tomorrow, non-farm payrolls on Friday. But again, news could be moving, could have an influence on the market in both directions. Number one, Congress needs to extend the funding for the government. It's set to expire on Friday. Tax reform proposals could move the market as we hear more headlines about what might be in the final package. Certainly the Mueller investigation could affect things. And then North Korea, I don't know what kind of reaction there might be missile, but maybe nothing. So anyways, it's going to be a tough day to say, look at this day or this day, but it's been volatile.
Yeah, but it really speaks to the volatility that's in the market because of news, not necessarily market data. I mean, this news factor is what drives things, and it's unexpected. I mean, we know what's coming down most of the time as far as some of the news items. We just don't, you know. But how do you announce what that crazy guy in North Korea is going to do, or what's going on back and forth, the latest tweet or craziness happening? So no, it's essential people have a tool like yours, and you do a great job of getting out concise information of exactly what's going on in our busy world. I appreciate that because I don't have time to read all this stuff out there. I'm not interested in the analysis. I just want, give me, should I lock or should I float? Tell me what to do. And then you get right to it. And you don't tell people what to do, but you give them the tools and the knowledge so they know what to do. So good job. I encourage people to check it out, mbsquoteline.com, or give Joe Farr a call at 512-637-1763. Man, I hope your voice is getting better soon. Danny was talking about it before the program. It sounds like a nasty one going around out there. I'm just going to fly out to Atlanta. We've got our planning meeting starting this week, so we're taking our whole group, everyone in our company, we're flying to Atlanta. We're doing 3 days of planning, so I'm going to get away from you, man. Don't need that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Hope you're feeling better, friend. Talk to you soon. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief word from Belma.
Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at velma.com, V-E-L-M-A.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
Yeah, it is true. It's who you know oftentimes is as important as what you know. And I'm glad you know who we are, and we like to get to know who you are. Head over to our website and make comments on there. Love to get feedback from you. Shoot me an email at david@tms-advisors.com. Love to hear about your ideas. Lots of feedback on this series of podcasts we're doing. And lots of feedback, Alice, about what was going on last week. Wow. Did that get pulled out of the bill? What could that have the negative impact on mortgage rates? I have not had a chance to go back and look at that. Good to have you with us, Alice. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Merry Christmas to you, too. Although we have a few more shows before that, but, you know, tis the season. Might as well start celebrating.
Yeah, tis the season, and we'll be doing that also.
Officially past Thanksgiving now. Okay, to talk about
yes.
The next round of holidays. So, yeah, so the Mortgage Bankers Association and, you know, even Bill Cosgrove and many others were involved in making sure that the Senate understood the consequences of one of the sentences that they had added into the bill. And, you know, obviously when everybody's trying to cut expenses, they're trying to throw in revenue to offset that. And this ended up in that net of trying to gain revenue. And part of it was going to loop in that mortgage servicing rights would have been taxed at the time that it was created. As of today, they're taxed
right.
When they actually realize that revenue. So it would have been a monumental shift. It would have affected really most entities involved in the mortgage banking business who retain servicing. So everybody's thankful that it literally was the 11th hour that language was modified and pulled out. So if you've seen the shots on the internet, people keep holding up sections of the bill with handwriting on them. I don't know for sure, but I'm wondering if this might have been one of those pages, right? You're in the 11th hour trying to make edits. No one's typing anything. They're all handwriting at that point. So I thought that was very interesting. So what we're left with then from a mortgage perspective is that the interest deduction is still in – the mortgage interest deduction is still in both bills, although the – Senate caps it, keeps it at the $1 million cap, and the House has it at the $500,000 cap. Property tax deductions are different, so the House does not have that in there. Let me fix that. So they both have a $10,000 cap on that one,
yeah.
So they're in agreement on that one. So the big question is, you know, how many homeowners will still have a deduction, itemized deductions versus now be under the new higher deduction threshold and, of course, the lower taxes. So that is a big unknown. At one point, 2 weeks ago, Zillow had an actual heat map that was showing that. They haven't updated it yet, but I would say, you know, sooner rather than later, people will start trying to pull all that together for us so we can see, you know, what the real impact might be to housing and whether or not when you now sit down and do the math for rent versus buy, what's the benefit? So there's a lot of concern out there from that regard. So we're still waiting to see. Obviously,
we had
11th hour changes last night. Anything can happen now that it goes back to conference for the two bills to get worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be real interesting. Thankfully, they fixed the most critical things. Boy, that would have been disastrous for the mortgage industry. It could have been huge. Ultimately negative for the consumers because we'd have just adjusted interest rates, unfortunately, upward, which would not have helped. So the unintentional consequences of some of these things, and these things are complicated. And, yeah, glad that one got – that was a close call. We got passed.
Yeah, that was a close call. Boy, if that would have passed, I think we would have had Andy Schell, our CFO, you know, extraordinaire yeah. as a special guest for many weeks.
Andy doesn't know this, but his Christmas gift is for the whole month of December, of January and February, he's going to be covering the entire tax bill in detail. I thought we'd just put that on you. What do you say? Do you think that's a good idea, Alice? You know, that would truly be a lump of coal. Yeah, no pressure, Andy. Just read it all over.
Pass-throughs and everything else we still have to figure out. So
we got him muted out, so he can't even respond right now. So he's muted on the switchboard, so we can harass him unendingly. All right. So anything else, Alice, that came out that last week that we should know about?
Well, just interestingly enough, House Bill 1699, actually another bill passed. That this is regarding the manufactured homes. I'm thinking, when did that happen? And who had time to pay attention to manufactured homes, for crying out loud? And there's two parts. It's one to clarify the wording that if you're a manufactured home dealer, you don't fall under SAFE Act licensing, and then also to change some of the wording in high-cost lending so that the manufactured home loans are treated more like a car as opposed to a residential mortgage. And this is already included in the regulatory relief package that the Senate has. So we are going to watch that full regulatory relief package. It's a big one. It's Senate Bill 2155. It basically takes 25 bills and puts them all together. SAFE Act transitional licensing is in that. So there's a lot going on with that one bill, including this, manufactured housing bill is also in that Senate bill. I'm thinking, why does somebody pay attention to this little thing on its own when it's already included in a package? So, I don't know. The manufactured housing lobby is really busy right now. They're getting their stuff done in between everything else going on. So that's my report for everybody today. And now that we get some, we'll keep, of course, everybody up to date on the tax reform as it relates to mortgages, but then follow this regulatory relief package as well. So that's my report for today, Dave.
That's your report today, and you're sticking to it. Thank you so much, Alice.
Yes.
Can't wait to hear Andy. He's got some retort on all this. I'm sure he'll got some feedback for us. So anyway, it's good to have you with us. Appreciate you, all of you listeners, joining Alice and I and Anna, all of us, to allow us to give you this important information. Alice, I get so much feedback on a great job you do. And so thank you on behalf of so many of our listeners. We love your report. And listeners, if you want to go listen to any one of the reports, like Alice, this has got all each one of her segments, just her segment, in on her page. So if you go to the Liquid and Lending website, you click on Alice's page or Andy Shell's page or Alan's page. We don't have Alan up there. We're working on that. Got to make some changes to that website. But when you click on that person, you then go to their website, their page within the Liquid and Lending website, and virtually every single recording is broken out, so you can go just listen to all of Alice's reports going back for as long as you want. Great stuff in there. Let's take a quick break to honor Finastra. David Bowling has a message for us. David?
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Liquid On Lending program. Known formerly as DNH, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
I'm trying to get the next ad to play here. Simplifile, here we go.
Simplifile has technology that gives you the ability to collaborate with settlement agents via real-time chat and messaging, allowing you to track changes, send, receive, and validate documents, as well as obtain status updates and deal with issues as they arise. All of this in a real-time electronic communication exchange. And best of all, you have a complete audit trail of all communications. To learn more, go to simplifile.com or call our good friend Nancy Alley at 1-800-460-5657.
Yeah, so good to have our advertisers, Finastra, Simplifile, thank you so much, as well as all of them. If you're interested in advertising, get a hold of us, and we'll direct you over to Bill Farmicus and his group. They handle all of our advertising. We are looking at adding advertisers as we add more podcasts. And joining me now is Alan Pollack, he and I are going to be doing the Tech Stack Radio podcast starting in January. Looking forward to that, Alan. How are you doing? Got a tech report for us?
Likewise, I am also excited. And yes, I've got an interesting topic today, net neutrality. It is
net neutrality.
A hot topic. That's right.
What
so
the heck? Andy Schell knows what it is, but I don't know what it is. What is net neutrality?
If you haven't been following. So I'm going to, highlight a couple very interesting articles. But right now, Inc.com has reported that everyone is up in arms because the FCC has released its final proposal to reverse the Obama administration's net neutrality rules. And the proposal is scheduled for a vote December 14th. Before I even get into the other information, what's very funny is about 15 minutes ago, senators just asked the FCC to delay its neutrality vote. And what's pretty interesting about why, it says a number of groups have found evidence that as many of the 22 million public comments on the FCC's proposal may be fake. Data scientists noted that at least 1.3 million comments were fake and came from a central source. And the Pew Research Center found that over half of the comments came from a temporary duplicate or fake email address. So the letter signed by Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Cory Booker have requested a delay in the vote until people can understand the accuracy of the information around some of these.
It's Russia. It's Russia. They're hacking our votes again. There you go. Schumer and
right?
Pelosi and Pocahontas are out there doing that, then I got to tell you, that sorry about that. Couldn't resist.
Well, if you'd like to send me there, I'll wear a wire. But, a couple of funny topics. Opponents of the rule, they argue that by doing so, big companies like Comcast and Verizon will take advantage of the public. They'll charge more money and they'll give preference to larger companies over startups that otherwise would be in full control of the information superhighway. Some people are really into net neutrality because, I read an interesting article about an example of go-go internet. Somebody was on an airplane and they didn't want to have to pay, but they did. They paid the $40 and they had a great experience because it was a high-cost product. Not a lot of people were using it. So their example, I think, is a little skewed, but what they're saying is, I am all for paying more to have a better experience. And then there's a lot of people that are saying, look, by doing so, you're hampering innovation. You're hampering the ability for companies, for startups, and their potential investors to have creativity that they can compete against their incumbents. Being able to figure out how much money you need to have a startup. And then all of the tools that small businesses use out there, like Slack and Visio Online and, Microsoft Office, those are all things that they're going to have to pay more to have more bandwidth, and then you're going to have to pay more to use those services. So it's an interesting topic. I don't think I have an opinion on it at the moment, but I thought I would at least make all of our viewers and listeners aware of the topic. And then second, David, I want to leave time for our guest speaker today and our social media topic, but I thought it would be important just to mention that we are getting ready for Tech Stack Radio. We've got a lot of content, a lot of great ideas and feedback. And if there's anything that you would like to suggest or contact us about, you can reach me at Allen, that's A-L-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors, Allen at TMS-advisors. And as David mentioned, we are looking for advertisers if you'd like to be part of the program. And we're very excited to have some new content rolling out in January.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And the advertisers are stacking up. I'm pretty encouraged by that. So appreciate you, Allen. Looking forward to it. And looking forward to
Likewise.
Seeing you in Atlanta. A little later on tonight.
I am here waiting for you.
You're already there waiting. All right, get the room cleaned out. We're looking forward to this planning meeting. So, folks, we're going to be right back with Jim Jump, who is with ArchMI, talking about their innovative RateStar program. Jim?
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about ArchMI RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by ArchMI's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
Good job. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Well, let's get over to Andy Schell. We've been harassing him just a little bit on this show today, so let's get over to him.
Finally, you get a word in. We turn on your microphone and, you know, get you in here. So it's good to have you, friend. Appreciate you.
Well, people, you know, first off, talking about taxes is a guaranteed snore fest. Nobody wants to talk about taxes.
Except when the tax bill could jump interest rates by 100 basis points because of how they're going to treat that. That has got to have fired you up this last week.
Well, it's actually even bigger than that. So people ignore taxes until they have to pay for it. And basically what the Senate bill, it wasn't unique to MSR. What it said basically is that if you count profit in the financial statements, then you pay the profit in taxes. So that sounds simple. If it's profit in the financials, then it's profit for taxes. And so, but that's a big deal because in mortgage companies, there's two really big issues. One is for MSRs, we count the profit when we book the loan, but we don't pay taxes until we actually collect the service fee. And that gets complicated and makes people's head hurt and their eyes roll back. But the part of this that's actually really, really big, because not everybody holds MSRs. So as long as you sold, released, it didn't matter to you. What matters to everybody is the interest rate lock commitment unrealized gain that's called the derivative asset. That would suddenly be taxable too because that's on an accrual in the financial statements that shows up as profit on the financial statements. So that would have then been profit for taxes. And that would have been a colossal millions of dollars in taxes. Hundreds of thousands, even small lenders would have seen hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes increase. That was the key. That was a really, really big deal. So I'm glad it got changed. Glad it got moved. But the one thing about this that's kind of interesting to me about all of the impact is if you go up to the rank and file mortgage company owner and you say, how is your MSR taxed? Well, they go, well, my CPA does it. Well, how's your interest rate lock commitment taxed? Well, my CPA does it. Because they don't know. They don't know how it works. And the problem specifically with the interest rate lock commitment is if you've got a big interest rate lock commitment that creates what's called a derivative asset, that's the name on the financial statements. So you got a big derivative asset 1 year, and your volume goes down, so you make less money. But that derivative asset also goes down because your volume went down. To the extent that the volume went down and the derivative asset went down in amount, that actually triggers a tax liability. I've seen CPAs get fired over this thing because owners have no clue. What do you mean? I make less profit.
What do you mean?
I have to pay taxes now on my what? I have to pay taxes on my blocked pipeline? And the answer is, yeah, you do. So it's nuts. It's crazy. But business owners need to take a deeper dive. Don't get surprised by this stuff. And they are. They're getting surprised right and left, and that's not okay. Business owners need to understand this stuff better. It's good to rely on your CFO, and your CFO hopefully understands it. But, you know, you don't want to be surprised by this stuff. Having a multi-$100,000 tax bill you weren't planning on when your volume's down and you're making less profit, that's bad. And that's actually what happens today. That's irrespective of – so I've stopped talking about what could have happened with the tax. I'm talking about what happened – today, right now, this year, into 2017, if your derivative asset at the end of 16 was more than your derivative asset at the end of 2017, it's possible for you to have a tax liability just because of that.
Wow. You know what? It's so important that people understand that. And it's amazing to me the number of people that are surprised. And they don't have to be surprised, Andy. I mean, they can call you. Listen to the radio podcast in Europe. In fact, I've had someone call me and say, what was the link to Andy's section? Because someone went back and listened to a whole bunch of your comments and picked up some things. They were looking for something you said, and it turned out to be really, really valuable. So, listeners, you want to get another one of these tips? You want to go back and listen to it all? Go to the Lickin' and Lending website. Click on Andy's handsome picture there and go over. That'll bring you to his page. And go listen to all the words of wisdom he shares with us. Andy, good job. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Looking
Dave.
Forward to having you participate in this with us. Another thing you talk about, Andy, is KPIs. And we've got Motivity Solutions with the KPI of the week. And it's the average resubmits. I love this. John Maynell, who is the vice president of customer service there, has got the word for us. So, John, what you got?
Thank you, David, very much. Great to be here, as always. And this week we have another underwriting-focused key performance indicator, and the KPI is average resubmits per file. This single measurement can not only help lenders develop consistency in underwriting and optimize departmental processes, it can also guide business users to examine contributing tasks in processing that affect this number. KPIs in practice, and you might say by definition, are constantly on display and updated in near real time, making it much easier to pinpoint however many friction points may be combining to produce a given effect, like number of resubmissions, which can also vary by product type, another aspect that the KPI can uncover, demonstrating once again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
That's so true. What gets measured gets results. And if you want to get results, get Motivity Solutions, part of the Black Knight family. We are so excited. We're just getting the last of their ads finalized to go up on the website and on the podcast. So Black Knight will be joining us, and they've got some data. So when you take Motivity Solutions program and lay on top of that, their data, excuse me, that they have, that Black Knight has, and you lay Motivity Solution on top of it, oh my gosh, it is for guys like me, a kid in the candy store, of how you can go in and look and slice and dice information, what's going on, to create the unique, distinct advantages for your company. So check it out, folks, MotivitySolutions.com, and of course, head on over to Black Knight, and we're going to have more information on that partnership. Well, we're excited to have Kathy with us. Now, I'm going to turn on her mic so she can help us. And so the first thing you help us with, Kathy, is how do you pronounce your last? I want to make sure I get your last name pronounced correctly.
Hey there. Well, I want to be able to pronounce your last name, too, because I think I've butchered it also. So my last name is Kemper Zank. And you are not the only person that has butchered it. In fact, most people do the first time around.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I pride myself in going back, and I have Paul King, who's the program director, usually put phonetic spellings in there, so it kind of helped me through this, and I didn't get that in the notes this time, and, boy, I need that. But anyway, Kathy, so good to have you here joining us today. Now, for those who do not know, a lot of people don't know who you are, may not, but I'm grateful to Joe Farr, who introduced us. And Joe, I mean, he's got a terrible cold. But Joe, I've turned on your mic, and I'm going to leave Alice's and Andy's and everyone's mics on so they can jump here on the discussion. But Joe, I want to say thank you very much for introducing us to Kathy. And you were particularly impressed with her, and share that with our audience if you're able and not in a coughing fit here.
No, I'm good for now. And one of the things Kathy has kind of focused on is bringing new people into the industry and training them the right way, the first way, which, you know, I've been in a lot of places where I've heard people complain about the aging population of originators and not having a good bench of people coming on. And Kathy's there to get them in and train them and to get them trained the right way from the beginning. And, that really struck me as a need for the industry.
Well, I'm glad to have her with us. I want to say thank you, Joe, for introducing us. Kathy, let's get into it. You're not only – when you talk about in your school, you not only – talk about just how to be a good, successful loan officer, but you also talk a lot about using various marketing tools, and we're going to be talking about the ROI that you have experienced through social media. It's off the charts. Talk to us about it.
Well, about 6 years ago, being a mortgage broker, rates dropped on this particular day, and I really, with my heart, I thought, I need to let people know, because I can save them a lot of money. So I made one simple little post on my personal Facebook page that just said something kind of generic, hey, rates dropped, go find your mortgage statement, look at your interest rate, call me and let me see if I can save you some money. It was that one post 6 years ago that all of a sudden it hit me that, oh my gosh, this is amazing, because I started getting texts, messages through Facebook, and phone calls just from that one post. And then it really hit me. It was like, okay, that took 5 seconds, and I know I got a loan or two out of that one post. And then it just started to snowball when I realized that this is the way to do it. And I am definitely not a social media specialist, But I started to lean on LinkedIn and a little bit on Twitter, learning myself right now about Instagram, and there's Pinterest, of course, Yelp and Google Plus. So there's all sorts of venues out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of venues, and the reason we're doing this series on social media is we're seeing significant evidence that the market is shifting, especially as we see more millennials entering the market. Now, you say you're not a quote-unquote social media specialist, so tell us about how you can earn different potential income and your experience with these social media challenges, and especially for someone who says they're not a specialist. It sounds like you've done all right financially by it.
Well, I have, and that's been the fun part, and I encourage all the people around me, and whether they're in mortgage or not, it's how people communicate now. So I probably earn close to $200,000 just through my personal Facebook page. I do have a business Facebook page now too, and that's over the last 6 years. But it's surprising. I have to really pay attention to my Facebook page now, because that is where people communicate, and they communicate through, you know, the private messaging, but they also will just post something in maybe one of my posts to say, hey, will you call me? I need to ask you about some mortgage stuff. And then through Yelp, I've probably earned at least $25,000. And
Yelp.
Then MailChimp.
Yelp.
I really never
Yelp?
Did. Oh, yes. Yelp.
Yeah.
I have. And I have the most – well, I shouldn't say that. I probably am the second – highest local Yelped mortgage person in my area.
I like that.
Yeah. Yelped person. And so I have gotten loans through Yelp, and they will specifically say, yeah, I found you on Yelp.
Yeah, already somebody's texted me saying, where is she located? We want to learn more. So quickly tell people so they are listening. They can go know where to Google or where to find your stuff so they can kind of listen to you and get it. How can people connect on your Facebook? Is it Facebook? And what is that?
Yeah. So I have, you know, just my personal Facebook, and just Google my name. There's really, I don't think any other Kathy Kemper Zanks out there, but make sure you spell my last name correctly.
Yeah.
Z-A-N-C-K. You can track me down there. You can also track me down through LinkedIn. That's an easy avenue to track me down. And then I do have a business Facebook page too for Catalyst Campus. And then also just for my business, I am still a loan officer now.
You are still doing that. That's good. So this is we're talking to someone who's actually in place doing that. You know, when you look at social media, a lot of people, the companies that are doing this very, very successfully, are drawing people into their Facebook. So they'll use Facebook. They're drawing people into their website. That's what I said. Excuse me, I misspoke. So they're using Facebook or Facebook ads or connecting to Facebook, but they're drawing them into their website and creating the experience there. For you, how would you advise people that are just getting started with social media? How should they go about it?
Well, the first thing I would say is think about what you're already doing. So if you're on LinkedIn or you have a Twitter account or you have Facebook already, most people have at least a Facebook page, so they communicate, you know, they have that. So I would get really savvy with just that. Learn one or two things a week about that particular social media conduit until you have it down packed. You can ask a coworker, you can ask a friend, or even your kids. My son, who's 16, he taught me everything I needed to know of Instagram in like 3 5-minute sessions when we were just driving to a family reunion.
That's very cool. Yeah, our kids, or in some cases, some folks' grandkids can get in there and help them get it figured out. That's great advice when you're looking at how to start and really grow this. Can you share some tips and what you've picked up along the way as you were beginning? What are some things that our listeners could do to begin to make social media working for them?
You know, I finally started to go on to YouTube. Is just this amazing tool. You can go and learn about the do's and the don'ts through YouTube. Just Google, you know, Facebook tips, and you're going to find a lot of people's opinions there. It's also important just to pick one at a time and get it down packed. And it doesn't have to be perfect. I would also suggest you watch other people and see what they're doing, so you can kind of learn how to post and what to post and what's interesting to post. And you don't have to have everything exact. Just start and focus on one thing. Don't try and pick up four or five different social media conduits at one time.
Yeah, so start with one is one of the ones, and then YouTube. You talk a lot about the power of YouTube, and one of the things that we talked about in getting ready for the podcast is, and this is said, Dad, it's so weird, you're stalking somebody. And I go, talk about the stalker factor. I mean, it's not stalking if you're trying to get a relationship with someone, is it? I mean, where's the creepy part step in, and where how's the proper way to do this?
Well, for instance, on, let's say, Facebook, because that's where I've had my most success and my most experience. I actually do a bit of stalking and see, I know what, for instance, the realtors out there. So if you're already in the mortgage industry and you want to connect with a realtor or a whole real estate office, start looking at what they're posting on Facebook. And you can repost them. You can see what they're doing right, see what they're doing wrong, because you can also learn from people who aren't maybe doing it quite right. They put videos
yeah.
that are way too long. They say too many things. Maybe they even put some negative stuff on there that's going to give everybody a bad vibe. So look out there in the world and just start to participate and think about what people are doing already.
I like the idea of, and if people, like, I had to correct my daughters on that stalking thing, because I said, no, if I'm in business, I want to form a relationship with people that are the most successful out there, where I get the greatest, you know, return on my investment from the relationship. So I see that as really doing a good job of selecting your client is, but that is a term that's used in Facebook and or in the social media world. It's, you're stalking them, Dad. That's weird. And I go, it's not stalking. You're doing a good job of vetting out who you want to do business with. Can you give us some examples from your experience of what is the first thing our listeners should do as they start up their social media programs? Some tips?
Well, you also, one of the things that I think is important is for you to figure out who it is that you want to follow. For instance, on Facebook, you can follow first up to 30 people and go look on a YouTube, and it's too hard to explain over this podcast opportunity. Go look on Facebook and put in Facebook how to follow first. And it's very, very simple. So you can set that up right there. Decide maybe some realtors that you want to follow. Decide other businesses you want to follow. I also follow like my local chamber folks and some other worldly
people in your community
companies
yeah.
in the community that I want to be able to maybe repost what they've got going on. By following first, it means that you're going to see their posts first. So then you're going to be able to comment. It's easier to find them. You do need to be mindful, though, when it comes, you don't want to have them drop so down below that you're not going to ever repost or comment on their stuff. So I've learned that lesson, because I was following all businesses and companies and whatnot, and I was starting to lose track of my own personal family. So
yeah.
Be aware. Also, make sure that when you set it up, there's, make it simple for yourself. I already have found about 5 to 6 websites or other people in the business that I will go to, and at the bottom of most people's websites and even things like quotes, you can repost directly from those websites onto your social media. So it just
yes.
makes it simple. And then make yourself a bit of a schedule and have it on your phone so it pops up, that it will remind you, because it's easy to get 3, 4, 5, 6 days go by and you haven't posted anything.
So you're I'm a big fan of time blocking. So you say block out some time each and every day or with some regularity, so you go in and just purpose it. And you're saying this does not have to be horrifically time consuming?
Oh, gosh, no. It can take 60 seconds by hopping on and clicking through a couple of people's reposting, making a couple of comments. You know, 15 minutes and you'll have gone through 3 or 4 social media conduits. Once you have the system set up and you get familiar with it,
mm-hmm.
it's the best return of your time in throughout your whole day. I actually took a little bit of a break from sending MailChimp. So MailChimp is another great conduit. It's not necessarily full-on social, but it's, MailChimp is a great conduit to communicate. I paused for a while to reach back out to my past clients as I was finishing up my school, Catalyst Campus, writing the curriculum. And I just got that up and running again. And I've already received two or three loans from just reconnecting with my past clients.
That's really interesting. One of the things is sticking with this. What tips do you have or strategy do you have for our listeners to stick with this? One thing you talked about is scheduling time. Now, you have some training, I believe, tools in your campus that you in your learning material. Is that correct, your educational material?
Yeah, like for all of my students who go through the school, in fact, there's 12 chapters in the school, and the very, very first chapter, I am telling my students to mark it on their calendar. They need to start connecting with their Facebook friends and family, coworkers, past college roommates, and the list goes on. So making sure that they have social media at the very top of their important list, and then to learn everything about it, to put it on their phone so it pops up and then reminds them to do what they need to do. Now, if people really aren't into social media and they just can't get excited about it, there are many businesses out there that can do it for
you. That will do it for you.
And it's a click of a button. Yep.
Yeah. It's a bit of an investment, but it is. I mean, they do it, and they do it really, really well. But, I mean, I think to the extent that you can do it, and what's really interesting is how you can connect, what works and what doesn't work. I was at a seminar recently on this topic, and the person teaching it says, you know what, I've been posting, I've been really working hard doing good professional posts. And he says, but it wasn't until I shared a video about something funny and hilarious that my daughter did. And I thought she had two posts. She has a personal Facebook page and a professional Facebook page. And she mistakenly posted on her professional page the video that she intended to put about her daughter that she intended to put on her personal page. But that cost for 20,000 responses. She says, I learned a huge lesson about the power of video. And I've noticed with your website and what you do, you have some fun with your posts. Talk about that.
You know, that I'm glad you brought that up, because video is a fairly new thing to me, and I got going with it because of my school. I had to do, I don't know, 100 videos for it, so I got really comfortable doing them.
Right.
And then I also learned, I hired a variety of different marketing companies years ago as I was trying to get up and running more in my with my day job being a loan officer, and video really came to light to know you. They get to see your life a little bit. They get to know your personality. And I think it's important, too, you don't necessarily need to do one every day. Maybe once a week or even once a month is fantastic, and they don't have to be perfect. In fact, it's
back
kind
are better
of fun
if they're not.
When they're not.
Yeah, it's more. I mean, it's, I think it's more credible. I think it's more. I think it's more of a credible. Yeah. You're more human than if you'd rather than you'd say, well, I got to redo that one because I muffed my words there. Make fun of it. Make fun of yourself when you did that. A little self-effacing actually can do quite a bit to help you on that. You know, I'm looking at the time. We're just racing through time here, so I'm going to run around to some of our regulars on here, starting with Alice. And Alice, if you want to jump in with any questions, one of the first questions I know is compliance, Alice. I look at social media posting, Alice, from a compliance standpoint, because there are different specific rules in different states that you can and cannot do, and especially when it comes to that. But, you know, as you listen to the discussion, what's your thoughts?
Well, thanks, and welcome, Kathy. So, I did have a chance to look at your website. It looks like you've got some content offerings out there. To Dave's question about compliance, you know, is that an area that you – cover for folks, or you know, is it more about how to execute on the social media marketing?
It is more about executing, but I also definitely teach my students that they need to stay away from anything that has specific lending things that might get them in trouble, and to check with their compliance department. I really talk about it, about just posting things that might get somebody excited. In Oregon, it's okay to post something like, hey, I just closed a loan and I did this type of loan Of course, not mentioning the person or anything, but I was able to do it, and so-and-so lender or another lender wasn't able to do it. So I teach my students to keep it super generic and from 900 feet, and if they ever have any questions, make sure that they're checking with their compliance department.
That's really
okay,
so important.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, that's very, very important. You know, Joe, let's get over to you. Are you into social media, Joe? I know you're into the market, so are you into social media a ton?
Excuse me, I have a, you know, more on LinkedIn than anything else. I don't do a lot of Facebook, but excuse me, I was going to ask Kathy. You know, when you think about creating videos, What kind of subject matter do you focus on?
Well, it depends where I'm putting it. And so if I go to LinkedIn and I'm doing a video for that, it's generally really always business oriented. But sometimes I will stray off, you know, Catalyst Campus and mortgage. I'll go into just some other general good business information. I also really focus on giving. And that was taught to me by one of the marketing companies that I hired years ago, and they really suggest that you give information, you give something that somebody might want to know, you give a date, an event, and so think giving, kind of no matter what social media conduit you're going to be using, before you post, think that, is this going to help somebody? Is this something somebody wants to know? Is it going to lift their spirits? Is it going to make them smile or make them laugh or make them want to repost it?
That's a really good point. And I think we have, it's called freemium, and we did a podcast, the guy a number of years ago, the gentleman that started came up with the whole concept of freemium is giving something of premium value away for free. And I love that context. So I encourage our listeners to go out and Google freemium, and we'll have him back on here soon and talk about that. Let's run over to Alan real quick and then Andy and get some more feedback. I've got some more thoughts on the video stuff, but Alan.
Yes, awesome topic. One is congratulations on all the success you've had. I know that for some people, they've tried it, but they've been unsuccessful, either that they haven't spent a lot of time on the content or on the amount of time they've spent doing it. So maybe would you have a suggestion on folks that may be new to this, where there may be others doing similar to you, what it takes to actually have a return on the effort that you put in to generate new business online?
How long does it take to get that return? Yeah.
Well, it may take a little while if you're just starting from scratch. It may take you a month or two, but I do remember back when I made that very first post when interest rates dropped, that is when the traction started. So consistency is going to be huge. You also, on a personal note for the Facebook page, you don't want to always post business stuff. You know, maybe once every 2 weeks you post, you know, some success story or something interesting or something that is helpful, but it's participating. You need to participate, like people's posts and comment. You need to get involved and you need to get consistent. And that's why starting with just one, because then you're going to see that momentum quicker. If you bounce around to a bunch of different ones and you're not participating very frequently or consistently, that's going to be harder to get that tread going. So focus on one and then shake it up.
Yeah.
Put different things on it, because that's when it gets interesting for people. If you post the same type of thing, people don't even get interested in whatever you're posting, because like, oh, it's going to be the same stuff about X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good
point. Do you have a mobile app or a consumer direct type of platform that you offer to those folks that don't know you or that do know you to start submitting information to you? So are you embracing some of the digital transformation? I thought I'd ask you that question.
You know, I don't. I would say that I'm more of a social media beginner, really. I just have found a lot of success, and I don't have any of those systems or processes or tools right now. One day, I would like to, because I can see the benefit. I did just partner with somebody in my office who really enjoys social media, and she's actually going to be taking care of some of mine. Which is worth it for me, because I know the success of it, And even if I can get more consistent, I'm going to be able to have a better rate of return myself for both of my businesses, my day job and Catalyst Campus.
Well, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, you're having some good success on the income. It's bringing in new business. And Andy found new business is found business. Andy Schell, you always have some unique perspective on this. What's your thoughts, Prophet Doctor?
Well, hi, Dave. Well, of course, I love ROI, so I'm not going to talk about that. What I really am interested in is you were talking about stalking and trying to watch people on Facebook. And I'm like Joe. I just do LinkedIn professionally. Facebook's more for people I actually really know. But how do you, if you're stalking someone, how do you get them to friend you? How do you get the top realtor in the office actually let you get access to their Facebook account?
Well, I think because you can always go in and watch them, even if they're not your Facebook friend, right? And so you can still make comments.
They're public posts. They're public posts.
Yeah, right. So you can still just start making a few comments here and there, and then go. My coworker, she made a little video, actually, and posted it as a private message to the realtor and asked her to go to coffee. And so, sure enough, she did, and now they're starting to do business. And that wasn't more than maybe a month ago. They've already had coffee, and they're starting to do business together.
Wow. That's good. Yeah, I think, one of the things, Andy, that I found was really effective that Kathy mentioned earlier was if you start sharing – blog posts or posts that someone does, whatever, be LinkedIn or stuff, so whatever, so and you start sharing it, they appreciate it and it helps their social media.
Yep.
I found that to be a very, very effective way to endear yourself to someone, and they will take note and they appreciate it, especially if they're trying to build their social media presence. There's so much we can go into. So when you look at what we're doing, what's the best advice for our listeners who haven't started social media marketing? Again, where's the best place to get started?
Well, think about what they have started. And if they haven't started anything, go cruise around and learn a little bit about the different possibilities for social media. Go to YouTube and just start watching videos and see what hits them. You need to be interested in it. It needs to spark something in you so that you'll keep doing it and that you actually want to learn.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to sort of interrupt you, one of the things I think you've done a great job, I've never met you in person, but I feel like I've gotten to know you through your YouTube videos, through your personality that you project. And I think you really do a great job of being transparent. And that gets into the whole YouTube thing. It's the second largest search engine, and many of our younger users, our millennials, are actually treating that as the number one search engine, even over Google. And so it's a great way to connect with people. I want to give our listeners this tip, Kathy, and then we're out of time. We're going to have to tell them how to get a hold of you. But one of the things we started doing within our own company is I required everybody to start shooting videos of each other, of ourselves. So we start shooting videos and just sending it out. We have a mass post just a text post, and we started recording videos and say, hey, good morning, everybody. Here I am, and wherever I'm parked, where I'm traveling a lot. So it started connecting us. I was blown away with the power of video, and we got to know each other at a deeper level and some of the humor that came out, and it's now gone crazy. We're having so much fun doing these videos. So you've got a lot of information, and a lot of people are going to want to go, I want to look up this lady and find out how she's doing it. If there's a way for me to get some new business, I want to learn about it. What is the most effective way for people to connect with you and learn more on how they can take your classes?
Fantastic. Yes. So my website is always a conduit. You can email me through my website, Catalyst Campus, and Catalyst Campus is spelled with K's. That's a mistake a lot of people make. So Catalyst Campus with K's. You can also email me with just my first name, and it's a K also. So Kathy@catalystcampus.com. And, of course, many social media conduits, Facebook, my personal Facebook, through LinkedIn and Twitter are also my social media platforms that I like to use.
Very, very good. Well, I appreciate you taking time this week to join us. Love to spend more time visiting with you. But listeners, the most important thing we're trying to communicate to you, there is a new thing afoot here within the mortgage industry, and it's not being talked about. It's not because it's being effective. It is so a cost effective to go in and connect with people through social media. And it is having a big impact on many businesses. So I encourage you to go in and listen to all our podcasts. We're going to continue this discussion a while longer. And we're thrilled. Not this discussion today. We're out of time. So, Kathy, thanks so much for joining us. And look forward. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas. Can't wait to meet you in person. But I feel like I already have because of the videos that you have uploaded. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I appreciate you being willing to have me on the show, being kind of a newbie out in the world. And I'm excited to continue visiting with you and meeting you, too.
I look forward to it. Yeah, well, thank you, Joe, for introducing Kathy. Folks, it's time goes fastest hour I have in my life is this podcast. We appreciate you tuning in and being here with us. We are excited about continuing the discussion on this. I've got a couple surprise guests. We've got Brian who has a technology that I think could be very effective. It's working very well. It's called CardTap, C-A-R-T-A-P-P. It's a mobile marketing suite that you can have that could be very powerful in connecting with your realtors. Another way to do it, it's outside of social media, but it is a mobile device, and we want you to know about it. So we're going to have Ryan on. Looking forward to that podcast. Folks, have a great rest of the week. And I look forward to talking to you. I'm heading out to Atlanta, Georgia. I got our whole team flying in there. We're going to be doing an executive planning and a 2018 planning session. So for the next 3 days, have a great one. Whatever you do this week, keep us in mind. Tell others about it. And look forward to having you here back next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week. And thanks for listening.